Eventually, still without trial or recourse, Baha'u'llah was released from prison and immediately banished from his native land, his wealth and properties arbitrarily confiscated. The Russian diplomatic representative, who knew him personally and who had followed the Babi persecutions with growing distress, offered him his protection and refuge in lands under the control of his government. In the prevailing political climate, acceptance of such help would almost certainly have been misrepresented by others as having political implications. Perhaps for this reason, Baha'u'llah chose to accept banishment to the neighboring territory of Iraq, then under the rule of the Ottoman Empire. This expulsion was the beginning of 40 years of exile, imprisonment, and bitter persecution. In the years which immediately followed his departure from Persia, Baha'u'llah gave priority to the needs of the Babi community which had gathered in Baghdad, a task which had devolved on him as the only effective Babi leader to have survived the massacres. The death of the Bab and the almost simultaneous loss of most of the young faith's teachers and guides had left the body of the believers scattered and demoralized. When his efforts to rally those who had fled to Iraq aroused jealousy and dissension, he followed the path that had been taken by all the messengers of God gone before him and withdrew to the wilderness, choosing for the purpose the mountain region of Kurdistan. His withdrawal, as he later said, had contemplated no return. Its reason, quote, was to avoid becoming a subject of discord among the faithful, a source of disturbance unto our companions, end quote. Although the 2 years spent in Kurdistan were a period of intense privation and physical hardships, Baha'u'llah describes them as a time of profound happiness during which he reflected deeply on the message entrusted to him. Alone, we commune with our spirit, oblivious of the world and all that is therein. End quote. Only with great reluctance, believing it his responsibility to the cause of the Bab, did he eventually accede to urgent messages from the remnant of the desperate group of exiles in Baghdad who had discovered his whereabouts and appealed to him to return and assume the leadership of their community. Two of the most important volumes of Baha'u'llah's writings date from this first period of exile, preceding the declaration of his mission in 1863. The first of these is a small book which he named The Hidden Words. Written in the form of a compilation of moral aphorisms, the volume represents the ethical heart of Baha'u'llah's message. In verses which Baha'u'llah describes as a distillation of the spiritual guidance of all the revelations of the past, the voice of God speaks directly to the human soul. O Son of Spirit, the best beloved of all things in my sight is justice. Turn not away therefrom, if thou desirest me, and neglect it not, that I may confide in thee. By its aid thou shalt see with thine own eyes, and not through the eyes of others, and shalt know of thine own knowledge, and not through the knowledge of thy neighbor. Ponder this in thy heart, how it behooveth thee to be. Verily, justice is my gift to thee, and the sign of my loving kindness. Set it then before thine eyes. O Son of Being, love me that I may love thee. If thou lovest me not, my love can in no wise reach thee. Know this, O servant. O Son of Man, sorrow not, save that thou art far from us. Rejoice not, save that thou art drawing near and returning unto us. O Son of Being, with the hands of power I made thee, and with the fingers of strength I created thee, and within thee have I placed the essence of my light. Be thou content with it, and seek not else, for my work is perfect and my command is binding. Question it not, nor have a doubt thereof. The second of the two major works composed by Baha'u'llah during this period is the Book of Certitude, a comprehensive exposition of the nature and purpose of religion. In passages that draw not only on the Qur'an, but with equal facility and insight on the Old and New Testaments, the messengers of God are depicted as agents of a single, unbroken process, the awakening of the human race to its spiritual and moral potentialities. A humanity which has come of age can respond to a directness of teaching that goes beyond the language of parable and allegory. Faith is a matter not of blind belief, but of conscious knowledge. Nor is the guidance of an ecclesiastical elite any longer required. The gift of reason confers on each individual in this new age of enlightenment and education the capacity to respond to divine guidance. The test is that of sincerity. No man shall attain the shores of the ocean of true understanding except he be detached from all that is in heaven and on earth. The essence of these words is this: they that tread the path of faith, they that thirst for the wine of certitude, must cleanse themselves of all that is earthly, their ears from idle talk, their minds from vain imaginings, their hearts from worldly affections, their eyes from that which perisheth. They should put their trust in God, and, holding fast unto Him, follow in His way. Then will they be made worthy of the effulgent glories of the Sun of divine knowledge and understanding. Inasmuch as man can never hope to attain unto the knowledge of the All-Glorious, unless and until he ceases to regard the words and deeds of mortal men as a standard for the true understanding and recognition of God and His prophets. Consider the past. How many, both high and low, have at all times yearningly awaited the advent of the manifestations of God in the sanctified persons of His chosen ones? And whensoever the portals of grace did open, and the clouds of divine bounty did rain upon mankind, and the light of the unseen did shine above the horizon of celestial might, they all denied Him and turned away from His face, the face of God Himself. Only when the lamp of search, of earnest striving, of longing desire, of passionate devotion, of fervid love, of rapture and ecstasy is kindled within the seeker's heart, and the breeze of His loving kindness is wafted upon his soul, will the darkness of error be dispelled, the mists of doubts and misgivings be dissipated, and the lights of knowledge and certitude envelop his being. Then will the manifold favors and outpouring grace of the Holy and Everlasting Spirit confer such new life upon the seeker that he will find himself endowed with a new eye, a new ear, a new heart, and a new mind. Gazing with the eye of God, he will perceive within every atom a door that leadeth him to the stations of absolute certitude. He will discover in all things evidence of an everlasting manifestation. When the channel of the human soul is cleansed of all worldly and impeding attachments, it will unfailingly perceive the breath of the Beloved across immeasurable distances, and will, led by its perfume, attain and enter the city of certitude. That city is none other than the Word of God revealed in every age and dispensation. All the guidance, the blessings, the learning, the understanding, the faith, and certitude conferred upon all that is in heaven and on earth are hidden and treasured within these cities. No overt reference is made to Baha'u'llah's own as yet unannounced mission. Rather, the Book of Certitude is organized around a vigorous exposition of the mission of the martyred Bab, not the least of the reasons for the book's powerful influence on the Babi community, which included a number of scholars and former seminarians. Was the mastery of Islamic thought and teaching its author displays in demonstrating the Bab's claims to have fulfilled the prophecies of Islam, calling on the Babis to be worthy of the trust which the Bab had placed in them, and of the sacrifice of so many heroic lives, Baha'u'llah held out before them the challenge not only of bringing their personal lives into conformity with the divine teachings, but of making their community a model for the heterogeneous population of Baghdad, the Iraqi provincial capital. Though living in very straitened material circumstances, the exiles were galvanized by this vision. One of their company, a man called Nabil, who was later to leave a detailed history of both the ministries of the Bab and Baha'u'llah, has described the spiritual intensity of those days. Many a night, no less than 10 persons subsisted on no more than a pennyworth of dates. No one knew to whom actually belonged the shoes, the cloaks, or the robes that were to be found in their houses. Whoever went to the bazaar could claim that the shoes upon his feet were his own, and each one who entered the presence of Baha'u'llah could affirm that the cloak and robe he then wore belonged to him. Oh, for the joy of those days, and the gladness and wonder of those hours! End quote. To the dismay of the Persian consular authorities, who had believed the Babi episode to have run its course, the community of exiles gradually became a respected and influential element in Iraq's provincial capital and the neighboring towns. By 1863, Baha'u'llah concluded that the time had come to begin acquainting some of those around him with the mission which had been entrusted to him in the darkness of the Siyah Chal. This decision coincided with a new stage in the campaign of opposition to his work, which had been relentlessly pursued by the Shia Muslim clergy and representatives of the Persian government. Fearing that the acclaim Baha'u'llah was beginning to enjoy among influential Persian visitors to Iraq would reignite popular enthusiasm in Persia, the Shah's government pressed the Ottoman authorities to remove him far from the borders and into the interior of the empire. Eventually, the Turkish government acceded to their pressures and invited the exile as its guest to make his residence in the capital, Constantinople. Despite the courteous terms in which the message was couched, the intention was clearly to require compliance. By this time, the devotion of the little company of exiles had come to focus on Baha'u'llah's person as well as on his exposition of the Bab's teaching. A growing number of them had become convinced that he was speaking not only as the Bab's advocate, but on behalf of the far greater cause, which the latter had declared to be imminent. These beliefs became a certainty in late April 1863, when Baha'u'llah, on the eve of his departure for Constantinople, called together individuals among his companions in a garden, which was later given the name Rizwan, Paradise, and confided the central fact of his mission. Over the next 4 years, although no open announcement was considered timely, the hearers gradually shared with trusted friends the news that the Bab's promises had been fulfilled and that the day of God had dawned. Precise circumstances surrounding this private communication are, in the words of the Baha'i authority most intimately familiar with the records of the period, shrouded in an obscurity which future historians will find it difficult to penetrate. End quote. The nature of the declaration may be appreciated in various references which Baha'u'llah was to make to his mission in many of his subsequent writings. The purpose underlying all creation is the revelation of this most sublime, this most holy day, the day known as the Day of God in his books and scriptures, the day which all the prophets and the chosen ones and the holy ones have wished to witness. End quote. Quote, this is the day in which mankind can behold the face and hear the voice of the Promised One. The call of God hath been raised, and the light of his countenance hath been lifted up upon men. It behooveth every man to blot out the trace of every idle word from the tablet of his heart, and to gaze with an open and unbiased mind on the signs of his revelation, the proofs of his mission, and the tokens of his glory. End quote. As repeatedly emphasized in Baha'u'llah's exposition of the Bab's message, the primary purpose of God in revealing his will is to effect a transformation in the character of humankind, to develop within those who respond the moral and spiritual qualities that are latent within human nature. Beautify your tongues, O people, with truthfulness, and adorn your souls with the ornament of honesty. Beware, O people, that ye deal not treacherously with anyone. Be ye the trustees of God amongst his creatures, and the emblems of his generosity amidst his people. Illumine and hallow your hearts. Let them not be profaned by the thorns of hate or the thistles of malice. Ye dwell in one world and have been created through the operation of one will. Blessed is he who mingleth with all men in a spirit of utmost kindliness and love. End quote. The aggressive proselytism that had characterized efforts in ages past to promote the cause of religion is declared to be unworthy of the day of God. Each person who has recognized the revelation has the obligation to share it with those whom he believes are seeking, but to leave their response entirely to his hearers. Quote, "Show forbearance and benevolence and love to one another. Should any one among you be incapable of grasping a certain truth, or be striving to comprehend it, show forth when conversing with him a spirit of extreme kindliness and goodwill." End quote. Quote, "The whole duty of man in this day is to attain that share of the flood of grace which God poureth forth for him. Let none therefore consider the largeness or smallness of the receptacle." End quote. Against the background of the bloody events in Persia, Baha'u'llah not only told his followers that, "If ye be slain, it is better for you than to slay," but urged them to set an example of obedience to civil authority. "In every country where any of this people reside, they must behave towards the government of that country with loyalty, honesty, and truthfulness." End quote. The conditions surrounding Baha'u'llah's departure from Baghdad provided a dramatic demonstration of the potency of these principles. In only a few years, a band of foreign exiles whose arrival in the area had aroused suspicion and aversion on the part of their neighbors had become one of the most respected and influential segments of the population. They supported themselves through flourishing businesses. As a group, they were admired for their generosity and the integrity of their conduct. The lurid allegations of religious fanaticism and violence, sedulously spread by Persian consular officials and members of the Shia Muslim clergy, had ceased to have an effect on the public mind. By May 3, 1863, when he rode out of Baghdad accompanied by his family and those of his companions and servants who had been chosen to accompany him to Constantinople, Baha'u'llah had become an immensely popular and cherished figure. In the days immediately preceding the leave-taking, a stream of notables, including the governor of the province himself, came to the garden where he had temporarily taken up residence, many of them from great distances, in order to pay their respects. Eyewitnesses to the departure have described in moving terms the acclaim that greeted him, the tears of many of the onlookers, and the concern of the Ottoman authorities and civil officials to do their visitor honor.